substantial material thing, then we should use it rather than something which will do that service less, just on the basis that, oh, I may become attached if I use something which is more sort of fancy materially. Like motor cars, we may think that in order that I don't become attached to the motor car I'm using, I must get the most beaten up motor car around. Make sure that it's one that'll break down every 5 minutes, because otherwise I'll become attached. But then how are you going to do your service? You'll be breaking down all the time and getting the car fixed. You won't be able to do your service very well. So rather we should be thinking, everything belongs to Krishna, and use things which are adequate for serving Krishna nicely. But on the other side, without being extravagant. You need a motor car, you don't need a Mercedes-Benz. But you need some decent motor car which will be practical and useful. So this is like this fine line which is there, which we have to be a little conscious of. Then, Prabhupada actually at the bottom of page 114 and going over to the top of page 115, he presents the idea which is described in the last of our verses on our verse sheet about the impersonalists. They reject things. They try to reject everything, actually. They want to be very renounced and they want to be free from any type of material influence, so they try to reject everything. So this is called Falgu Vairagya. Falgu basically means fruited. Insufficient renunciation or incomplete renunciation. It's an improper idea of renunciation. And again, Srila Prabhupada gives a very interesting example to illustrate this. This is the example of a river in India called the Falgu River. Have you heard of the Falgu River? Perhaps not. Have you heard of it? Is it mentioned here? Oh, right. So there is a river called the Falgu River. It's an interesting river. It's dry. It's dry. It's just a riverbed. But if you dig down beneath the riverbed a little bit, you find there's water there. Actually, the river is running, but it's underground. So Prabhupada refers to this river, and in this context here, that the impersonalists, they are apparently very renounced in the context of this last verse on the verse sheet. Apparently, on the surface, they seem very renounced. But if you dig beneath the surface, then you find that the river of material desires is still flowing. That the renunciation is superficial. It's incomplete. So, therefore, in the long run, because the river of their desires is still flowing beneath the surface, in the long run they have a tendency to return to material activity. Like the Arya Samaj, I think we mentioned this once. Actually, the Arya Samaj are meant to be strict renunciants. Swami Dayanand. Have you heard of Swami Dayanand Bankim Roy? No? Anyway, well, that's good, actually. He's not really worth hearing about, certainly not in a positive way. Anyway, he started the Arya Samaj, and he hated deities, hated Krishna. Oh, they're very similar to Muslims, actually, the Arya Samaj. They have many of the same attitudes as Muslims. You should break the deities. Deities are totally meaningless, completely useless, so just throw them out the window. That's the same idea as the Muslims. So, ostensibly, they are strict renunciates, very philosophical. The absolute truth is impersonal. They're like a form of Mayavadi. But what are they doing here? What is their main activity in South Africa? Old age homes. And that's all they're known for. They're not really known for being renunciates and philosophers and people like that, at least according to my understanding. But they're well known for their big old age homes. So this is the idea. They can't maintain this position of artificial renunciation, so they fall down. But because they have some sort of moral fiber of some sort, they come down to the mode of goodness, and they help the old folks do some charitable work like that. Philanthropic work. This is like the Falgu River. On the surface, it appears like there's no river. But you look, you dig beneath, you see that there is a river. And because the river is really there, then eventually these people, they fall down. Then another thing which Prabhupada talks about, which we have mentioned here, developing good personal qualities. This is on page 116, second paragraph. A Krishna conscious person, being naturally purified, has no need of developing any other purificatory process of thought or action. On account of his being highly elevated in Krishna consciousness, he has already acquired all the good qualities and is following the rules and regulations prescribed for the mystic yoga process. Such rules are automatically practiced by the devotees. Then Prabhupada talks about non-violence. Devotee is naturally non-violent. And some people stress or join a vegetarian movement. It becomes like a cause for them. You must be vegetarian, I must be vegetarian. But a devotee is automatically vegetarian. And the devotee is not a vegetarian because he wants to be a vegetarian. The devotee is a vegetarian because he wants to be Krishna conscious. And the devotee knows that to be Krishna conscious, you have to only eat food which is offered to Krishna, which happens to be only vegetarian. So therefore it just follows that the devotee is vegetarian. So the devotee, without making any extraneous endeavor about being non-violent, trying to cultivate non-violence, trying to cultivate vegetarianism, or whatever. There's so many nice things, like being anti-abortion. So many people there trying to promote anti-abortionism. But the devotee is naturally anti-abortion, because the devotee understands the position of the soul and what is the process of birth and conception and like that. So, celibacy also. Some people nowadays, they're appreciating the value of celibacy because of AIDS and other serious sexually related diseases. So they're not devotees, but they're becoming celibate. Or at least becoming, you know, like very restricted in their sexual activity. So a devotee doesn't have to make a separate effort to join a celibacy movement or to like that. But just through being a devotee, it naturally follows that the devotee is celibate. So these things do not impel devotion, but devotional service impels them. Devotional service produces those results. That you become celibate, you become non-violent, you become a teetotaler or non-smoker, you become a vegetarian, truthful, clean. These things are naturally promoted by Krishna consciousness more than they cause Krishna consciousness. And then the story of Mrigari the hunter is given. Down at the bottom of page 116. So you all know the story of Mrgari the hunter, right? We don't have to tell you the story. You know that story. Okay. So that is the evidence. He became both vegetarian and non-violent by becoming a devotee. And he became very nice, first-class non-violent person, first-class vegetarian, through becoming a devotee. Then, the last part of this chapter, page, page 117 and 118, basically. We already heard about the three main processes, the five very important processes. So now we hear about nine other processes. Anyway, there's nine other processes, which are also very, very important. They're also within the 64. In fact, like kirtana, chanting, is one of the five very important ones. So again, Prabhupada is stressing the devotional activities. So there are nine devotional processes, and there are examples given of the people who performed, like very important people who performed each of the nine processes. Bhakti Colin, tell us who's the important person who particularly practiced hearing. Right, good. And Bhakti and Charmaine, tell us who's the important person who practiced chanting. Who? It's right here on page 117. Bhakti and Raki? Right, Shukadev Goswami. So they're all listed out here, hearing, chanting, then remembering. Prahlad Maharaj, he was being tormented by his father. He was always remembering Krishna. So he's like the prime example of a devotee absorbed in remembrance. Then Lakshmi Devi serves the Lord's lotus feet. King Prithu performed worship of the deity, Archana. Offering prayers, Akrura became perfect through offering his prayers in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam when he was entering Vrindavan. Rendering service, Hanuman. Befriending, Arjuna. And Bali Maharaj offered everything. And then Maharaj Ambarish did all nine. So there are nine examples, one for each one of the nine. And then there's a 10th example, who's Maharaj Ambarish, who did all nine. He heard, he chanted, he remembered, he worshipped, he served, befriended, and he did all nine. In this way, all these 10 people became Krishna conscious. So we should... Prabhupada's plan was basically that you don't do one or two or three. Prabhupada's arrangement is basically that you do all nine. You try to engage all your senses. So during the day you can do different activities so variety can be there. And all your senses get purified by being engaged in different activities at different times. So this is the process that this is the way we are following the process, at least. So, right at the bottom of page 118, bottom of the second to last paragraph, not the very last little bit, Prabhupada says, if one develops unalloyed devotion to the Lord, liberation will follow the devotee as his maidservant. Everything will follow. Mukti will follow and bhukti will follow also. The devotee will get everything, the best of everything. So mukti will be there. And Prabhupada mentioned, I didn't mention, but Prabhupada mentions a few pages before regarding Yukta Vairagya. It's on page 114. About two-thirds of the way down. where he refers to this, Prabhupada refers to this verse, anasaktasya vishayan, that the devotee doesn't accept anything personally, but accepts everything in relation to Krishna. So Prabhupada explains that eating, the devotee doesn't renounce eating, but the devotee eats food, only food which is offered to Krishna. But that happens to be very nice food. So actually the devotee eats very nicely, but the devotee remains in the renounced position. Whereas the impersonalist who thinks that I won't eat this nice prasad offered to these deities, I'd rather just eat some, you know, something extremely simple. The devotee is more complete in his or her renunciation by eating the nice prasad than the impersonalist is by eating nothing or eating just some very meager foodstuffs. So in this way, everything is complete for the devotee. So any comments or questions about this? Yes. Right, yes, you may have heard the story. Prabhupada was being told about, I don't know who, but one of the famous impersonalists in India, who was famous that one night he was sleeping using a pillow, but under the pillow someone had placed a 1 rupee note. So in the morning this fellow got up and said, I couldn't sleep last night. I felt that something was wrong. Some contamination was there. So he lifted up the pillow and there was a 1 rupee note. So then he said, ah, just see. And then the same person, someone offered him some money, like a substantial donation. So he backed away. Please, no. Take it away. So Prabhupada laughed. And he said that if you offer me money like that, I'll take everything. And he sort of gestured like that. I'll take everything for Krishna. So this is Yukta Vairagya. But as we mentioned, it's a fine line. It's a fine line, and one has to be careful not to be too renounced and in this way become hard-hearted and sort of lopsided in Krishna consciousness, not to become too much on the sense gratification side or the sentimental side like this. So in this way, in order to do this, one needs direction. And this is where the association of older devotees is, and particularly the association of the spiritual master, is essential to get that personal direction, how you as an individual can practice Yukta Vairagya in a way in which you'll advance very nicely without falling into these two traps of artificial renunciation or improper, like sense gratification or enjoying spirit. Any other comments or questions? How does one intensify? Well, there are different things you can do. You can be more like, take more time to hear from him, listening to his tapes or reading if he produces any written material like that. And you can try to understand more clearly his instructions and then try and be more concerned to carry out the instructions better. So then you can also, like in terms of your personal interactions, try to communicate more with him. Speak more if you get the opportunity to have personal association. Write more if you don't get so much personal association. Inquire more, like I mentioned about following the instructions. So you can inquire, do you have some personal instructions for me? If you haven't been given any personal instructions. Like that. You can ask questions, either personally or in writing. So in this way, and you can also study, like there's that book, Spiritual Master and Disciple. So all, or at least so many of Prabhupada's statements on that subject are there. So you can study that and just try and appreciate more the principle of the relationship, how important it is to have a spiritual master, and how you're meant to relate with the spiritual master. So in these ways, you can intensify the relationship.
Other than what spiritual master and Diksha, without relationship you have Shiksha, Guru,
beg your pardon?
Other than what spiritual master, everyone's spiritual master,
yeah.
One can take shelter of other.
Yes.
Shiksha.
That's true.
So healthy?
Healthy? It may be. It can be done. That, I mean, it's not. If you look in Shastra, you'll find that it can be done. You won't find that it must be done. You won't even find that it should be done. But you'll certainly find that it can be done. So if such a relationship develops in a natural way, then it can be done. And it can help. It can certainly help. But we read the other day, I don't know if you were here, a quote from Prabhupada. He was explaining, it was when we were discussing chapter 7, about following in the footsteps. So there was one quote Prabhupada said that you can accept a Siksha Guru, but in order for the person to be considered for as possibly becoming a Siksha Guru, you have to see that that person's instructions really tally with your Diksha Guru's instructions. Not, you know, instructing something else. Like, and the idea there in terms of ISKCON is that we mentioned, Prabhupada, Rupa Goswami mentioned that there are basic instructions, which means the 64, and they apply to all devotees, no matter who their spiritual master is. But then there are detailed instructions. And the detailed instructions of one spiritual master may vary from those of another. And we see that they do sometimes, not always, it depends. So in the context of ISKCON, we should be careful if we're thinking of accepting someone as Siksha Guru. We should be careful to see that the instructions of this person, they really are consistent with the instructions of my spiritual master in terms not just of the general things that you must chant 16 rounds and so on, but also in terms of the details, meaning the basic moods, like that. Otherwise, you may end up with a clash.
Yeah.
It can happen.
But once you get permission from the...
Well, one has to get permission. But before that, one should have used one's intelligence to make some evaluation in these terms. Yeah. Yeah. One should really have come to the conclusion oneself that this person's instructions really are consistent with my initiating spiritual master's instructions. Because there are cases where they're not. Not that the two are like, one is not bona fide and the other is, but just the emphasis and, you know, desires of one. Like, to give you an example, I happen to know one spiritual master who's a great devotee, but if you want to be his disciple, you have to distribute books. If you want to do anything else, you can't be his disciple. He won't accept it. So that's his detailed, you know, that's his perspective. So, you know, another spiritual master whose view is, you know, maybe more broad or whatever you would say, not so much fixed in that particular line, it would be hard really seeing how there could be consistency, like adequate consistency. So, you know, this is a practical consideration for us as devotees, because actually it can, it It helps. If you accept a Siksha Guru, it can help very much. It's like, instead of having one cake, you can have two. And, you know, it's twice as nice, in a sense. Something like that. It increases the niceness. But one has to be a little careful. Yeah. Like, say, between Prabhupada and his godbrothers. Prabhupada was, I mean, after certain, initially he was a little inclined to let some of his early disciples who first went to India to accept some of his godbrothers, like Siksha Guru. But after certain experiences, he became very strict that his disciples couldn't have such a relationship. Very, very strict. So we should be mindful. We have to be mindful like this. But if you do have like a nice Siksha relationship with a senior devotee and he is very consistent with your own spiritual master, it can only help and increase the benefit, actually. So if done nicely, it's a very positive thing. Yeah, that's true. Some other comments or questions? Yeah. How does one know? How does one know if one is pleasing the spiritual master? You can ask him. That's a pretty good way. And if, you know, if you happen to see, like you may be thinking, or you may be not thinking that you're not pleasing him. You may not be really aware if you are or not, but you may see that he's becoming angry. So then you can take it that you're not pleasing him. Yeah. But otherwise, it's a simple thing. You can just ask. Yeah. Of course, if your relationship with your spiritual master is somewhat distant, physically, in geographical terms, then it may be difficult. So then a fairly good sort of rule of thumb or basic idea can be gathered by how your authority is appreciating or not appreciating you, like that. But otherwise, you know, you can also know that your spiritual master wants you to chant 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, and be fully engaged in your prescribed duty. So in simple terms, if you know you're doing those things, then you know that at least you're going in the right direction. Yeah. At least you can know that. Otherwise, try asking him. Try asking, how could I improve my service to you? He may say that, oh, you're doing okay. So that's okay. But then you can also ask, how could I improve? So that'll increase, you know, make it even nicer. Nice question. Any other comments or questions? Okay. How can one understand the desire of the spiritual master? Again. Oh. Well, the desire, you can ask him. If in terms of personal desire for you, you can ask him, what would you like me to do? Otherwise, the mood, well, then you have to hear and observe his activities, what he's speaking about, what his... You know, activities he involves himself in. And then, in that way, you can get some idea. Of course, to understand in detail what he's really thinking, particularly on deeper levels, you won't be able to do. But if you observe how he acts, and what he preaches about, what he stresses, what instructions he gives, how he likes to see the devotees engaged, what things please him and what things displease him, then you'll get, you know, like a general idea of his general mood. Yeah. Mataji?
How does
But those who are fully engaged in ISKCON, generally, they're quite conscious of having a relationship with Prabhupada, and that Prabhupada is there and that the service is being accepted by Prabhupada. But he's not personally there. Now, that's in principle, but in terms of different persons, it may depend. Some person, some devotee, may be able to serve in separation and be quite happy being like having some realization that there's a connection transcendentally despite the distance physically. But another person, due to their personality, they may need to have some personal contact. Particularly, you know, like newer devotees, particularly, they may need it. If they don't get it, then they may become a little lost. Then they may look for it somewhere else. Sometimes this happens. Actually, if they had a little more transcendental realization, then they would realize or begin to realize the transcendental connection beyond physical contact, which in the long run one has to realize, because generally the spiritual master leaves the planet before the disciple, generally, because generally the spiritual master is older physically. So generally it will happen that the devotee will be forced to have some realization of the relationship beyond the physical aspect in order to survive in Krishna consciousness. But if a neophyte is not getting enough, who has that type of nature, they need that personal contact. If they don't get it, they may start looking for it elsewhere. Then again, it depends. If they look for it elsewhere in a nice way, it may be good. But if they look for it elsewhere in a mood of dissatisfaction, my spiritual master is not looking after me because he's not giving me enough association. So if they look in that mood for like a Siksha Guru, as Jai Sachinandan was saying, then that's not really very good. But if they look for it in terms of, you know, the nicer sense that we were talking about, then it can be good. Because if you need a personal relationship actually, then you have to have it. If you actually need it but you don't get it, then you may fall down. So Prabhupada, with some devotees, he would give them so much personal association despite the fact they weren't very good devotees. Whereas some other devotees, I mean this is just in some cases, some other devotees, they were very good devotees. But Prabhupada, if they came to see Prabhupada, Prabhupada would ask them, why are you here? Haven't you got any service to do? Something like that. They're incidents. So Prabhupada, in the case of those weaker devotees, you know, he knew if this devotee doesn't have my personal association, then they won't make it. So sometimes he would give those devotees his personal association. So anyway, I mean, personal association is always nice. If a devotee feels that I don't like having personal association with my spiritual master, that's a problem. That's a problem. But we should also understand that the spiritual master is given by Krishna. Spiritual master is not, you know, it's not just like a whimsical thing or just chance or, but actually the spiritual master is given by Krishna. So one should understand in principle that Krishna would prefer it, Krishna would like it, if I could really get a solid a relationship with my spiritual master. But it may involve not getting much of his association. But if Krishna has made this arrangement, then actually I should try to cultivate the idea of relating and separation, which is a little more advanced platform. And if you can do it, it'll only help. It'll also help in the direct personal dealings. Is that all right? Any other comments or questions? So please read chapters 15 and 16 and write a summary. When I say write a summary, write about a page, something like that. I would hope it should be sufficient, around about a page. And we'll discuss, or begin discussing the subject tomorrow. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Here are your assignments back. Someone's assignment with no name on it, I don't know. I'm sure you can recognize your own writing, but I don't know whose it is. Of assignment on chapter 14. So these are the nuttages. Then we have verses. We have lots of verses today. Tons of verses.
Mm-hmm.
You give these to the ladies. These are for the men. And just hang on a sec. Wait. Bucky and Rucky, just give these out also. That's the second one. And please, summaries, the assignments from last night, if you could pass those in. And whose is this? I believe it may be one of the Mataji's. If I remember correctly, it was in amongst the ladies. It's not bad. I don't think it's anything to be ashamed of, but it's just that I don't know whose it is. Thank you. Let us begin. Everyone got their verse sheet? Everyone handed in their assignment? Okay. So let us begin by reading our invocation. Let's read the invocation. Nana Shastra Vacharanai Kanipano Sadharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padaravinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko
Vande Rupa Sanatano Raghujago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatan Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus, they're honored all over the three worlds, and they're worth taking shelter of because they're absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Shishad Goswami Prabhu Ki Jai. So yesterday we concluded the discussion about Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. We pointed out some of the apparent duplications in the 64 items, rules and regulations. We summarized also a little bit about the five very important activities in devotional service. Then we talked about how Varnashram, even though it's supportive in some respects of bhakti and helpful, but it's not an essential ingredient in bhakti. And the same with jnana, knowledge, particularly knowledge of the soul. This doesn't include knowledge about Krishna, of course, but when we referring to jnana here, we mean knowledge of the soul as distinct from the body. So that also has a limited place or limited usefulness. Some usefulness is there, but it is quite limited. And the same with vairagya, renunciation or detachment. There's a place, but it's quite limited. And mainly it's the places at the beginning of our devotional service. But actually devotional service, particularly we were discussing Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, it consists really of those 64 items. The three most important, the five very important. Then we also referred at the end of chapter 14 to 9, which are also very important practices. So this is when we talk about devotional service and advancing in devotional service, we mean these 64 items, and Varnashram, Jnana, and Vairagya, their usefulness is small and only in certain regards. So one shouldn't get too caught up in Varnashram, one shouldn't get too caught up in philosophical research. A good example of that, some of you will have heard, that there has been a controversy, you could say, about the soul recently, and where from the soul has come. Were you a little aware of that? No? Well, there's no harm if you weren't aware, actually. But I think some of you were aware. Did we come from Vaikuntha or the Brahma Jyoti, or have we been here literally forever or eternally? So there was a lot of speculation and brain racking being done, trying to figure out. And even some devotees, couple of devotees got together, wrote a book about it. But when the GBC body just met in Mayapur, they went through the book and discussed like this whole argument and the whole conflict of points of view. And they didn't appreciate the whole process, actually. They took it really to be more like part of jnana than part of bhakti. So they actually banned the book, which was full of speculative ideas of why Prabhupada may have said certain things, we think perhaps for this reason or that. And they basically the conclusion they gave, not just they gave, but they presented one fairly lengthy letter by Srila Prabhupada where he was resolving the same conflict between some of his disciples 20 years ago. And in it, essentially Prabhupada said that we were with Krishna, we still are with Krishna. We have never not been with Krishna. But the problem is that we've forgotten. And when we remember again, we'll see that we are with Krishna and we never weren't. I mean, this is in extremely simple terms, but that was the basic idea. So, jnana, in terms of understanding the soul, what is the soul, how the soul is not part of the material world, there's a place for that, but it's a limited place in the process of devotional service. And similarly, vairagya, there's a place, but it's a limited place. And as the devotee becomes more and more advanced in Krishna consciousness, in devotional service as such, then rather than jnana and vairagya helping the devotee in bhakti, but actually the devotee's devotional service produces jnana, including in this case knowledge of Krishna also, and also produces detachment through being attached to Krishna, serving Krishna, like that. So that was the idea then regarding Varnashram, Jnana, and Vairagya. Just a limited place, mainly at the beginning, and they're not essential ingredients which must always be there in order for devotional service to be there. So that concluded. There was brief discussion. There was a discussion about 9 important processes which fall within the 64, hearing, chanting, remembering, and so on, and the different devotees who particularly exemplify those activities and how nice those activities are. And that's basically the end of the discussion on Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. Then we asked you to write about chapters 15 and 16, which are all about also sadhana bhakti, but a particular type of sadhana bhakti, which is fairly different. It has some very important differences, at least, from Vaidhi sadhana bhakti. That is Raghunuga sadhana bhakti, or spontaneous devotional service. As we know, sadhana means practice, so Raghunuga sadhana bhakti means practicing spontaneous devotional service. You may not have it, but you're practicing and cultivating that. So it's a sadhana. This indicates that it comes before bhava bhakti. We should all know that there are 3 general divisions that we're studying: sadhana bhakti, bhava bhakti, and prema bhakti. So Rupa Goswami describes 9 levels in devotional service, beginning with shraddha, culminating in prema. You all know those: shraddha, sadhu, sangha, and so on. Anyone not familiar with those? I assume you are. I think you should be. So, bhava bhakti and prema bhakti are the final 2 stages, and the other stages from shraddha, shraddha, sadhu, sangha, bhajana, kriyanatha, nivritti, nishta, ruchi, and asakti, they're all within sadhana bhakti. So this means that raghunuga sadhana bhakti takes place before bhava. Anyway, the subject is very profound, actually, and it's a little complex, slightly complex. So we'll try and take our time and go over it carefully and try and make it as clear as we're able. One thing which slightly complicates the matter is that in Nectar of Devotion, particularly in chapter 15, there appear to be some mistakes by the editors, not by Srila Prabhupada, but by the editors, which complicate the matter just a little bit. Anyway, we will come to that in a minute. Up on the board here, you see we've written three words: rag, rag atmika, and rag anuga. So these are the rag is the element which is there in spontaneous devotional service, which makes it spontaneous. Then rag atmika and rag anuga, they're two types of devotees on two different levels who are involved with this rag, but they're involved in different ways because of the levels, the different levels they're on. Now, rag means, basically it means intense attachment. The term is even used in regard to material attachment. Any of you know a verse from Bhagavad Gita in which Lord Krishna uses this word rag to mean intense material attachment? Actually, there's a few places. How about raga dvesha vimuktaistu? Lord Krishna talking about the demons. They have rag. They have dvesha. Dvesha means hatred. Rag, they have intense attachment. So the word rag means like that, and the context, of course, that we're viewing it in today is in the context of devotional service. So it means intense attachment to Krishna in devotional service. Now, if we look at, we've given you a couple of sheets of verses. If you look at the sheet which is titled Verses Regarding Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, I hope there's not too many sheets to confuse you all. The one that has a four-line heading, Verses Regarding Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti. Got it? Okay. So the very first verse there. Rag atmika bhakti mukhya vrajavasi jane tara anugata bhaktir raganuga name. The original inhabitants of Vrindavan are attached to Krishna spontaneously in devotional service. Nothing can compare to such spontaneous devotional service, which is called rag atmika bhakti. When a devotee follows in the footsteps of the devotees of Vrindavan, his devotional service is called Raganuga Bhakti. So a distinction is being made. And we've written these terms up here. So the idea is, this incidentally, this is Lord Chaitanya speaking to Sanatana Goswami. And this is directly Prabhupada's translation from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, rag atmika means those who have rag. And raganuga basically means those who, you could say, are cultivating rag. So there's a difference. There's a difference. The inhabitants of Vrindavan are not working on improving in devotional service. They're already there. They're already on the perfectional platform, and they're fully absorbed and fully attached to Krishna most intensely. And that attachment is in terms of their individual eternal relationships with Krishna. Raganuga then means someone who is trying to cultivate that, who does not have it, but is trying to cultivate it. In other words, it's a sadhana, practice. And rag atmika is the perfectional stage where you've completed the practice. Now, I mentioned about some slight complications in chapter 15. If we read the first paragraph, examples of spontaneous devotional service can be easily seen in Krishna's direct associates in Vrindavan. The spontaneous dealings of the residents of Vrindavan in relationship with Krishna are called Raganuga. These beings don't have to learn anything about devotional service. So many devotees, having studied Chaitanya Charitamrita and these subjects generally, have then come back here to Nectar of Ocean and come across the use of this term Raganuga in this chapter, and it appears to be like an editor's mistake. It appears to be that, because this, what we've read just now, is basically based on the verse that we just read from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Anyway, it's not a big thing, don't get into anxiety about it. But we just do want to make a distinction between those who have rag and those who are trying to achieve it. And particularly this verse from Chaitanya Charitamrita is making the distinction. So, then there's nice description in this first paragraph how the Vrindavan devotees, they're already perfect in all regulative principles. In other words, they've been through the whole process of sadhana and rose up and up, and eventually they came to this level. They have nothing more to learn, they have nothing more to practice. They're completely absorbed in their relationship with Krishna with intense attachment, even to the point that they overlook his position as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, it's called spontaneous, as distinct from someone like Hanuman. Hanuman is a famous devotee, and he is deeply absorbed in love for Lord Ram. But his love, his attachment to Lord Ram, is deeply rooted in the concept that this is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is my Lord, and I'm serving him because he's my Lord. So, of course, this is very nice, but it's a different mood to these spontaneous dealings of the inhabitants of Vrindavan, where they're simply intensely attached to Krishna. Krishna's the most wonderful person. Krishna's our most wonderful friend, unlike any other friend. Krishna is this very wonderful child, unlike any other child. Or Krishna's even our lover, in the case of the gopis, unlike any other young boy. So a spontaneous attraction to Krishna with very intense attachment, which isn't dependent on anything else. Not the fact that Krishna is God, not dependent on the fact that there are rules and regulations which say you're meant to worship God. But just because Krishna is Krishna and they're so absorbed in him, they're attached like that. So it appears to be true that in chapter 15, whenever you see the word Raganuga, it would appear that actually the word Rag Atmika should really be substituted if we're really to be correct. Because the inhabitants of Vrindavan, who are mainly being discussed, they are not, Nuga means to follow. They're not just following devotees who have rag, but they definitely have rag within themselves which is what rag atmaka means, that you have rag within your atma. So is that